program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The information and ideas provided within this show are intended for educational purposes only and not intended as investment advice. The hosts of this show do not provide tax or legal advice. You should consult with your tax or legal professional regarding your individual situation. No information should be interpreted as securities advice. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, and investment professionals. While we have endeavored to ensure the accuracy of the information in this program, we do not guarantee or give any warranty as to the accuracy, timeliness, or completeness of any information. The process of buying and selling a business can be frightening for the parties involved. What paperwork is needed? What is the true market value of the business? How do you know what transactions are required to be processed in addition to the sale of the business? Welcome to Biz Broker Talk, where you'll find the answers to these questions and much more. Your hosts, Robert Howells and Doug Scheiding, have a decade of experience providing business broker services to large and small businesses. Today, they're ready to help you. Here's Robert and Doug.
Welcome to Biz Broker Talk with Robert Howells and
Doug Scheiding.
We're here today visiting with John Denny, an exit planner, a coach, business coach, and a facilitator and business consultant. We're discussing his third book, Hunting in a Farmer's World, about the differences that drive entrepreneurs. His first book was 11 Things You Absolutely Need to Know About Selling Your Business that I highly recommend as a broker. Second book in presentation is on beating the boomer bust, and we're going to discuss his book today. And if first three people that email in to the show at bizbrokertalk.com will receive a free book. We'll receive a free book. John is with us for the next hour. We're going to just begin by talking about the book. Well, it's quite a book of self-assessment for a business owner, I might say. It was very on point to, as a broker, all the entrepreneurs that we run into. It was almost a comedy read at some points. But how'd you come up with the concept? I mean, it's a very unique.
Well, thanks, Robert. I wanted it to be unique. For years, I've coached and I've consulted with hundreds of small business owners, and I had a collection of stories that are just fabulous stories. I mean, they're stories that any entrepreneur can relate to. And the idea of the book, which is subtitled Celebrating the Mind of an Entrepreneur, is that small business owners are different from other people. We're 3% of the population, but we provide over 50% of the jobs in the United States. We're hunters. We hunt. We go out and we are the same personalities and the same types of people who for the last 10,000 years have provided for the tribe.
Right.
We go out and find the game. In our case, it's the money. But we find customers and we find ways to generate revenue. And then we create jobs and we pay people to help us with that. But it's not a trait that is built into everybody. Most people are not interested in being business owners. Most people don't want to bear the burden of the risk and
decision-making.
Right. Paycheck every single week. Nothing against large corporate executives in large corporations, but, you know, entrepreneurs look at somebody who has built himself to a position of making millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, and you know, these guys are smart and women, and they're bright and they're capable and they're hardworking and they can do things, but they never missed a paycheck. They never had to look at the bank balance to see if they could bring home money this week.
Yeah, making payroll is always a challenge with some small businesses, at least at some point in time.
That's the big sweat. Yeah,
that's the make or break for everybody in business. So in the middle 90s, 1994, 1995, I read a book by Tom Hartman. Tom is actually a radio host in the D.C. area now, has a popular radio show. And he's a psychologist, and he wrote a book called Attention Deficit Disorder, A New Perspective. And it became known as the Hunter and Farmer book. That's not in the book. That's not the point of the book. But he does mention that the traits of what are supposedly ADD children that don't fit well in our educational system today or in large businesses today are actually the traits of the people that created most of the innovation and most of the change in our society over the last eons, you know, thousands of years. And that stuck with me. So when I sat down to write the book and I wanted to put this all together in a concept, I didn't want to write just another consultant how to manage your business book.
Right.
Because those are the books that unfortunately many entrepreneurs read. And they get very frustrated because they try and implement all these suggestions, these systems, you know, this A to Z, how to run your company, do this first, do that next. You have to manage what you measure. You have to pay attention to the details. It's all about the financial statements. And they get frustrated. And then they think that they're failing as a decent business owner because they're not doing these farming tasks of day-to-day management. When really, the skills that allowed them to build a business in the first place were their vision, their leadership, their ability to see something in the future, and their problem solving, their tenacity, their refusal to give up. And those are the things that I wanted to celebrate in the book, not the ABCs of how to manage.
Because, yeah, I mean, you go in the book down through the different types of business owners, from the technician, you know, on up, you know, the individual that tries to outwork everybody else because they've got to be a better technician and more efficient than everybody else that's in the business.
And a lot of small business owners can never break that.
And that's what we see. I think the hardest thing that we see is someone going from working in the business to working on the business. And that's the biggest change in the sale of a business, is for a buyer to come in, purchase a business where someone's been working in it, and start working on it. It's
more
profitable, more efficient, typically, and not be pulled down into the day-to-day operation of the business, working on it versus working in it.
Right. And one of the great rewards of owning a small business, the psychological reward, besides having some control over your life or perception of control over your life, that's not always entirely true.
No, it's not.
But, you know, you've got customers and vendors and employees.
And inventory.
And inventory and lots of other banks. One of the psychological rewards is being the answer person. Everybody comes to you because you know the answers, because you built it all from scratch. I say in the book that a lot of people use the analogy of building a business and comparing it to building your own house. Well, it's not like building your own house. Unless you designed the house and you decided where every brick would go and you decided and you brought the craftsman in and showed the carpenter how to nail nails and you showed the mason how to spread mortar exactly the way you wanted it. You know, you don't have that level of ownership in the house. In a small business, typically, if you're the founder of the business, everybody does the tasks of the business, the work of the business, the way you taught them to do it. They do it your way. Every stick of furniture in the business, every customer, you probably went out in the beginning and landed all the customers yourself. You have personal relationships with these people. You know, the business is so ingrained that it becomes very difficult, and you see it as brokers all the time. It's difficult to separate yourself from the business.
Well, you kind of get drawn into it, like Bob's saying, working in the business versus on the business. As an entrepreneur, you're working on the business when you're growing it, then your book kind of points out how they get kind of sucked into the farming task and in the business, and maybe the self-awareness of not being, you know, sucked into the farming right. task is really the important thing.
Because it stops them from doing the things that made them a business owner in the first place.
Right, as the business grows.
Right, and they get stuck. And that's why we see so many businesses stuck in that, it depends on the industry, but the $1 million to $2 million range where they just can't seem to grow yeah. out of that yeah. because it required, the business still requires the owner to make every key decision.
And I think a great example of that is the radio show from last week with Warren Barhorst. I mean, insurance is a great example of that. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at an insurance company, that's exactly how they're built. You know, it's only so much an insurance agent can sell and manage and maintain, you know, to renew those policies until they start working on the business, training and hiring or hiring and training people to start growing it. And that's what Warren successfully did. I think he's got like 100 plus employees right now, and that's in like 14 years he did that, from working in the business to being able to manage working on it. That's a difficult thing to do.
It is. And even in professional services, I know numerous founders, managing partners of law firms and accounting firms and engineering firms and insurance firms who not only run the business and are trying to build and lead a team of people, but still have a great portion of their identity tied up in the fact that they're the number one producer. They have all the big clients. They have all the big accounts. And giving that up is tough. Giving that up requires a lot of self-confidence. Not only because, you know, the potential threat of having the client's loyalty be with someone else, but just seeing your name at the top of the list month after month and year after year, and the gravitas, the reputation that comes with that when you go to talk to your people and go, don't forget, I'm the one that really knows how to do this because I am the best.
Right.
And we call it in the book, we call it the Superman cape. It's hard to take off that cape sometimes. And it's hard to step back and just work on the business, as you said so well. You know, we have the other thing, and you know, as we talk about the beginning of the book and the concept, when I interview clients, one of the things I hear most often, I say, what makes you good at this? What makes you successful as a business owner? And they get a little closed, a little not quite embarrassed, but they may look down a little bit and their voice lowers a little bit and they say, you know, I think I'm a little bit ADD. And you are. That's the whole thing. You know? That's why you can juggle 17 things at once. That's why you can answer off the top of your head as you're walking through a room and solve a problem in no time flat. That's why you can become a utility infielder and understand the finances and understand sales and understand marketing and understand inventory control and building systems. And for so many business owners that are exiting their business, they look around the company and they see that maybe they've done a good job and they've got four or five key managers. But the key managers are good at one of those things. And they look for the mini-me, you know, the person who can do all those things that they can do. But those people aren't out there. Those are flying mermaids.
Yeah, when we ask a seller, you know, what do you see, what's the characteristics of the buyer for your business, and they try to replicate somebody like that. I mean, it never is. It's not.
Right. And what many successful business owners forget is when they started, let's say they started to build their business on their sales skills, and they were excellent salespeople. Well, they learned finance little by little as they went along because they had to. They learned
begrudgingly, usually, right. Yeah.
And they learned human resource and management because they had to. But they learned it little by little as they went along. And now they're in business 20 or 25 years, and they're pretty good at finance and understanding it. They're pretty good at HR. They're pretty good at various management tasks. And they can't understand why they can't find somebody that can do four or five or six different things. Because you don't have 20 years to teach them.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I'm not sure that's more of an innate thing and not necessarily learned in terms of being the hunter and having that sort of personality.
Right, and hunters adapt. You know, I in the book we say that there's three critical skills or critical traits that are common to all successful entrepreneurs. The first one is problem solving. Entrepreneurs don't know the meaning of it doesn't work. It just didn't work this time. There's a second solution, a third solution, plan D, plan E, plan F, and they will continue to roll out plans until they find one that works. One of the analogies I use in there is Star Trek. Yeah. You know, how many times have you seen Spock turn to Kirk and say, Captain, I calculate that we have a 14% probability of success. Kirk doesn't care. He knows what he wants, and if this plan doesn't work, he's going to come up with another plan. Every time the plan fails, Spock is distraught. It's like, oh, goodness, the plan failed. We're not going to make it. You know, we're going to burn up in the sun or whatever's going to happen. Yeah. The Klingons are going to get us, you know. And Kirk's like, okay, so that plan failed. Here's the next plan. Let's go. So that problem solving is number one, that entrepreneurs aren't beaten when something doesn't work. The second one is tenacity. I mean, how many business owners do you guys know that should have failed 5 times, 10 times, 20 times, some of them, and they just refused? They just, you know, I'll just have to work harder. I'll just have to do more. I'll just have to try again, because they don't understand the meaning of failure. The plan didn't work, problem solve, new plan, but there's no end to the new plan. So, you know, combined, that's tenacious problem solving.
It's kind of Thomas Edison, right? You know, how many times did he try to light bulb?
Yeah, I know. And his quote was, I know 10,000 ways not to make a light bulb. And then the third trait is, and I got this from a client and friend, Steve O'Donnell, who has built an amazing company with over 500 employees now. And I call it the third eye. He called it the ability to steer in the fog. The entrepreneur has a vision of what this needs to come out like, what the company is supposed to look like, what customer relationships are supposed to look like. And he or she is driving for that even when no one else can see it, even when he's not sure what the direction is, but he'll take the direction he feels will get him there. She'll do what she feels work. And they're not right all the time, but they're, you know, when they're successful, they're right. It's because they're right more often than not, because they kind of knew what the company needed, even when it wasn't in the numbers, it wasn't in the P&L, it wasn't in the contract, but they know what their company needs. Yeah. And they need, one of the points of the book is you have to trust that.
Yeah, it's a gut feel. Well, we've been speaking with John Denny regarding his book, Hunting in a Farmer's World, about the differences that drive entrepreneurs. When we come back, next segment, we're going to talk about running a hunter company.
Comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Business brokerage is a very regional business due to the requirement of having face-to-face buyer and seller meetings. While Robert and Doug are regionally centric to South Central Texas with their brokerage company, Business Brokers of San Antonio, and their equipment appraisal company, Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio, they have also established BizBrokerTalk.com to help assist sellers and buyers with finding professionals in a variety of areas required in the business transaction process. This includes certified business brokers, SBA loan packagers, 401k conversion companies, lenders, as well as other necessary advisory sources. Whether you're selling or buying a business, you need a team of professionals on your side to guide you through the process. Visit BizBrokerTalk.com today. And if you're in the South Texas area, please visit Business Brokers of San Antonio at bbofsa.com or Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio at eaofsa.com.
If you want to know about investing in emerging and frontier markets, or if you have experience in this field but still need to know more, tune in to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. Gavin explores news, current trends, and insights about both categories of investing. His guest experts, along with his own knowledge, will help you stay above the line when it comes to growth potential, whether in funds or equities. He will look at what to invest in and avoid. Tune in to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
This is Biz Broker Talk with Robert Howells and Doug Scheiding. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you may send an email to podcast@bizbrokertalk.com. Now, back to the show.
How many times do you hear?
Welcome back to Biz Broker Talk with Robert Howells and
Doug Scheiding.
We're visiting today with John Denny regarding his book, Hunting in a Farmer's World, Celebrating the Mind of an Entrepreneur. And we're going to focus this segment on really the running a hunter company. So let me kind of begin by talking about the, you know, the four types of hunters. We've got the technician. That's usually the small business owner that has a craft or a skill. It could be business services. You'd be a technician, like an auto repair or computer repair, whatever.
Or an attorney.
Yes, as a skill. You have the inheritors as a second and third multi-generation company, right? We have the acquirers, which is the ones we as brokers typically deal with, those that have acquired the business, and those ones we typically see working on the business instead of in the business that the owner usually does. And then what John calls the entrepreneur's entrepreneur, the creator. Talk a little bit about that. And then we're probably going to move on and talk about the hunter organization. So, John, where do you want to start?
Well, just a quick fill-in on the four types. Technicians have a skill, and as we said in the first segment, they're the ones that have the greatest difficulty separating what they do from the company they run. They're the ones that get stuck, and usually their initial income is based upon their work, 40 or 50 or 60 hours a week, and they're the ones that have the toughest leap hiring someone else to go out and service the customer to deliver the work because it's not theirs, and that they get stuck. And usually when you're looking at a very small company that has a few employees and has been that way for a long time, the owner's a technician. He or she is still doing the work. The inheritors, second generation folks, third generation folks, you know, we all know the stats. 75% of businesses don't make it through the second generation. About 90% of those don't make it through a third generation.
For a multitude of reasons, but maybe
yeah,
still.
And one of the main reasons, I've worked with a lot of them, one of the main reasons is they don't have that relationship that we talked about before, about building a house and building a company. They didn't build it. And when they were raised in the business, they were often raised with a watchword from dad or mom on a daily basis that said, I built this. I know how to do it. This is how you do it right. Don't screw it up.
Get out of my way.
Right. Yeah. And when they finally take over the business, they have no experience in the loss of a giant customer, the loss of a line, or a key employee, or change, you know, overseas competition or new technology. And all they've been taught is do it the way I did it. Well, I'm sorry, mom and dad did it that way 25 years ago. That's probably not going to work today. Yeah. And they have trouble adjusting. The acquirers are true hunters. The acquirers are the people that don't want to build a business themselves. Mm-hmm. They don't want to start from scratch. They want to buy something that works and make it better.
Yep.
And then the creators, as you said, Robert, the entrepreneur is entrepreneur. The creators are few and far between. You know, Michael Gerber refers to them in the E-Myth. You know, the entrepreneurial myth is that somebody sits on a mountaintop somewhere and envisions taking capital and labor and creating wealth. Well, I don't know too many small business owners that started out by sitting on top of a mountain with a concept and capital, but they happen. Obviously we've got a lot of tech billionaires that started out that way. You know, they had an idea and they just pursued the idea. But they are rare, but they're a lot of fun to work with.
So these four different ways of running a hunter company?
They all have different traits. And yes, the acquirer, for instance, I know numerous acquirers that have bought companies where they have deliberately never learned the technical aspects of the business. They don't want to know how to be a plumber. They don't want to know how to make the widget or develop the agreement that they want to run a business.
That's the best. That would be the best scenario. Yeah.
And the creators know how, but they start out from day one not intending to do it themselves. They may teach others how to do it, or they may hire others that know how to do it, which is the latter is more common. You know, I want this, and I'm going to go hire somebody to make it for me so that I can make money from it. And so, obviously, they have different attributes in the way they run companies. There are farmers in all of those categories. They're a minority. Probably in the inheritors is where I see the most farmers, the ones that were just taught to do it a certain way and can't break out of that. But there are certainly great hunters. You know, people that have taken a second-generation business and grown it by 10 or 50-fold. We were talking about one before with the payroll company.
Right.
His parents started it. It was a little discount payroll service for 5 employee companies, and now he has a very large company with a national presence and the second best-selling software in the industry. You know, obviously a hunter,
right?
Even though he's an inheritor, but the creators and the acquirers tend to be more hands-off. The technicians clearly hands-on, and the inheritors tend to be hands-on as well. So there's both types in all four of those.
And your management skill, I guess, is reflected in that.
Yes. Well, and one of the points we make in the book is management versus leadership, and that gets into running the hunting organization. Leadership is number one required if you're going to have other hunters in your company. Hunters don't like to be managed. That's why so many of them are small business owners. the whole boss thing doesn't work for them.
Yeah, the corporate structure isn't something that they like to work in. They like to work on.
I say in the flyleaf of the book, in my bio section, that people refer to me as a serial entrepreneur because that's a popular term now, but I always thought that chronically unemployable was a better description. I just don't work and play well with people telling me what to do.
Problem with authority is another word that's used.
Yeah, that's on probably every report card I ever got. But when leadership is a hunting skill. Leadership, the book opens with a little anecdote of a prehistoric hunter and how he brings game into the tribe and how he shows others better methods and how things will work. But in that same anecdote, there's his leadership caused the other people in the tribe to come to him and start asking him to solve the day-to-day problems and make the day-to-day decisions. And he offloaded that. He wanted no part of that. He gave it to the guy that did the tanning of the hides because he was well-suited to sit there and have people come and complain to him all day.
Yeah, he wanted to be all...
Yeah.
So in your analysis of this, it's interesting to me that it really seems like business culture, colleges teach, the corporate style of management, which is really farming. And that's the entrepreneur, the hunter, is getting drug into becoming a farmer.
Right. Farming is cyclical. It was almost the end of the 18th century before calendars were in common use, because calendars didn't matter in an agrarian society. You had planting season, you had harvest season, you know, you cleaned up the tools and prepared for the next planting season. Hunters are linear. Hunters move from point A to point B, and then they move to point C and D. They don't want to go back to point A again. That's boring. That's management. Management is a farming task. And large corporations have their budget cycle. We plan, we budget, we set goals, we achieve those goals or fail to achieve those goals, we report them to Wall Street, our stock goes up, our stock goes down, and we start planning again for the next year. And it's very much a farming cycle. Our schools are on a farming cycle. Why do we have summer vacation?
Because for kids to go home and help the parents.
And parents work in the fields. You know, we have, you know, much of our stuff is, and I've got a piece about there in schools. You know, large organizations do not encourage entrepreneurship. I read a story yesterday and you know, about a young girl who had a great entrepreneurial idea. It worked out very well, and then she got squashed. She's a Girl Scout. And she set up a table in San Francisco outside a marijuana dispensary. And she sold 100 boxes of cookies in 2 hours.
Location, location, location.
Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, the immediate reaction was for the Girl Scout councils to come out and say Girl Scouts are forbidden from selling cookies outside marijuana dispensaries. Why? They sell lots of cookies, you know. Isn't that the idea? It's legal. Isn't that the objective? So, you know, we large organizations squash those instincts. They don't like people breaking out. I went to apply after I got out of college to a large corporation, very large corporation, one of the, probably at the time one of the 10 largest corporations in the United States. And they did a battery of behavioral tests on me. And they came in and they said, you know, Mr. Deeney, you're very bright and you've got great attributes and you've got the educational requirements, but we just don't see you fitting in here. And I wanted a job, and I wanted a job with a big company. And, I was all excited about the possibility that I might get hired by this company. And I said, why not? And they said, you just wouldn't fit. We can tell from your behavioral profile that if we put you in an office and gave you work to do, this is what they told me, you would finish the work as fast as you could, and then you would be out of the office wandering around looking for something else to do.
The problem with that is what?
Right. This is bad. And they said, in our organization, it is. We can't accommodate people like that. We're sure you can be very successful at something, but you can't be very successful working your way up in a large corporation.
Well, that's perfect. They were telling you you were a hunter and not a farmer.
I thank them for the direction.
So that's probably what initiated your chapter on dealing with yourself then, and dealing in chaos and things like that.
Right. Hunters thrive in chaos. Hunters, again, the Superman cape. They're agitated when everyone else is calm because they see the threats that other people don't. And then they're calm when everybody else is panicking because they understand that if they panic too, it's all going down the tubes. Yeah, so, you know, I'll tell the story of Christy Prescott, Corporate Travel Planners. It's one of the stories in the book. And Christy, this is a wonderful story. It'll take a couple minutes, but Christy built Corporate Travel Planners up to about 140 agents handling travel reservations. Well, what people forget about 2001 is that in the travel industry before 9/11, there was 9/1. 11 days before the World Trade Center was attacked, airlines went to zero commission on airline tickets, which put a lot of travel agents out of business because their bread and butter was airline ticket commissions. So Christy had planned for that, and she was managing her company through that, but they were already in crisis mode on 9/11 when they had thousands and thousands of clients stranded all over the world trying to get home. Remember, the planes were down for 4 days. You know, they had people in Nova Scotia. They had people all over the place. And these people are all calling up, and she's paying 140 people to be on the telephone with no revenue generation. whatsoever. There's no money coming in. Not only is there no money coming in, but as these people rebook tickets after the airlines were back up, the airlines, because they have electronic, you know, transfer with all the travel agents' accounts, the airlines are withdrawing the commission for the tickets that were sold before the 1st of September and then issuing new tickets at zero commission. So not only is Christie paying 140 people to generate no revenue, but there's negative revenue. There's tens and truthfully hundreds of thousands of dollars flowing out of her bank account on a daily basis as the airlines recoup all these commissions. And I asked Christie afterwards, because she was just a cheerleader through the whole thing. I mean, she was bouncing through the cubicles, you know, it's going to be okay, we're going to be fine, we're going to be terrific, we're going to come through this, we're going to take care of all our clients, everybody's going to be happy with us at the end, we're going to be heroes. And I said, how did you do that? How did you keep up that front? Because I know you were panicking. And she said, I was worried, but I wasn't nearly as panicked as my staff. And she said, everywhere I looked, I saw fear in 140 pairs of eyes. And I knew if I cracked one inch, if I showed one bit of the terror I was feeling, they would have killed each other stampeding for the door because they thought it was all over. And the only thing that held that company together, and it's still one of the top companies in the nation in its field today, and it does very, very well. The only thing that held it together was that one hunter walking around going, I'm going to figure this out. I've got it. Don't panic. Just do your jobs. I've got a handle on it. And that takes a constitution that most folks just don't have.
We got a few minutes left in this segment. Do you want to talk a little bit about hiring? Because that's a big aspect of a business is hiring and firing.
There's a chapter in the book called Hiring is an Adoption. Mm-hmm. And as small business people, we get so close to our employees. And, you know, we worry about them and we take care of them. And it's hard when I go to work with a business owner and I say, How's that big new initiative going, or how's landing that critical account going? He says, well, you know, Charlie was supposed to do that, but then I was depending on him, and I don't have anybody else, but Charlie's wife is sick, and his kid's in jail, and his car's broken down, and, you know, people have lives, and you need, as a business owner, to keep your eye on the ball, and there's a time to be flexible, and there's a time when you can't because you owe it to the rest of your employees. And that's that's a leadership thing. That's not a management thing. You can't micromanage Charlie's life. You can't manage his tasks. You have to stand up and say, the company needs to go here, and this is what we need to do.
Yeah, you say in the book, you know, hire slowly and fire quickly.
Yeah, and most small business people do it the other way around. They're handling their job and the job of the missing position simultaneously. They get in a bunch of resumes. They look at it. They go, this one looks okay. They interview a couple people at 7 o'clock at night because that's the only time they have. And they go, yeah, I've done 3 interviews. I can't stand this anymore. You're hired. And then when the person doesn't work out, they hang on and they hang on and they hang on. Maybe he'll come along. Maybe he'll get better in another couple months.
Well, it's a badge of honor for a lot of business owners to say that, the employees are like family. But
We hear that a lot. We're going to take a break, and we come back. We're going to talk about the Successful Hunter Organization.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Business brokerage is a very regional business due to the requirement of having face-to-face buyer and seller meetings. While Robert and Doug are regionally centric to South Central Texas with their brokerage company, Business Brokers of San Antonio, and their equipment appraisal company, Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio, They have also established BizBrokerTalk.com to help assist sellers and buyers with finding professionals in a variety of areas required in the business transaction process. This includes certified business brokers, SBA loan packagers, 401k conversion companies, lenders, as well as other necessary advisory sources. Whether you're selling or buying a business, you need a team of professionals on your side to guide you through the process. Visit BizBrokerTalk.com today. And if you're in the South Texas area, please visit Business Brokers of San Antonio at bbofsa.com or Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio at eaofsa.com. Are you ready for what happens next? If you have your investments, retirement planning, and business plans all in a row, you're probably set. But are you really all that sure? Listen to In Black and Whites with host Peter Whites. Peter and his guests will cover business and investment topics that you need to know about right now. Whether it's new technology, 401k plans, mergers and acquisitions, we're here to help you. In Black and Whites airs live Tuesdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Business. We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. This is Biz Broker Talk with Robert Howells and Doug Scheiding. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you may send an email to podcast@bizbrokertalk.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Biz Broker Talk with Robert Howells and
Doug Scheiding.
We're visiting with John Denny, author of Hunting in a Farmer's World, Celebrating the Mind of an Entrepreneur. And we're going to do our last segment discussing the successful hunter enterprise. Maybe to start off, John, by talking about defining success.
Yeah, clearly, Robert, people define success differently. People have a mental hierarchy of what success means. You know, we have Maslow's hierarchy of needs. First, you want food and shelter, then you want security, then you begin worrying about self-actualization. You know, for a company to be successful, it has to first provide what the owner expects from it. And that can be anything from a decent living for the family to a secure retirement to great wealth. And I know entrepreneurs that have set out on day one for the great wealth and achieved it because that was their focus, their objective. You know, I deal with a lot of wealthy people. The top 1% of incomes in the United States start at about $350,000 a year. Of course, that 1% has a heck of a spread because the top one half of 1% of the United States starts at around $10 million a year. So, this, you know, and yeah, but we call these people, you know, if you look at the Occupy Wall Street folks, they're calling the 1% rich. And I know a lot of people that make $350,000 and don't think they're rich.
Right.
But
lifestyle issue.
Yeah, and my son asked me once. He was in his early teens, and we were at Deer Valley, and Deer Valley is a very nice resort. We were skiing, and there's some spectacular houses along the ski lift. They call them 2022s. That's 20,000 square feet for $20 million for two people for 2 weeks. And some of these are four stories tall with a swimming pool on the third floor completely glassed in. And my son asked me, he said, Dad, what's rich? Because we live nicely, and a friends come over the house, and some of them say, oh, boy, I didn't know you were rich. And he said, but, Dad, you always say we're not rich. So what is rich? And I thought about it for quite some time. We got back to the condo and over dinner that night, and just so people know, our condo wasn't in Deer Valley because we're not that rich. You know, our condo was about 10 miles outside of Deer Valley. It was nice, but it wasn't on the slopes.
No third story swimming pool.
No built-in swimming pool on the third floor, unfortunately. And so I said, you know, John, I think there's three levels of rich. I said, the first level is well-off. well-to-do, and we are that. We don't have to worry about a car breaking down. We don't have to worry about paying the bills at the end of the month.
Where your next meal's coming from.
Right. We don't live paycheck to paycheck. Right. If we want to go out to dinner or take a nice vacation, we do. And that's well off. Then I think wealthy is what I call the next level. And wealthy is where you can do all the things that we're able to do. But unlike me, you don't have to go to work to be able to do them. You've amassed enough assets that you can just live that way without worrying about where the income is going to come from. And then the third level is what Bill Gates once called escape velocity. And his definition of that is you wake up in the morning, you do anything you want to do all day long, you buy anything you want, you go anywhere you want. And when you go to sleep at night, you have more money than you did when you woke up in the morning. That's escape velocity.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I said, son, I said, we are well-to-do, and we aspire to be wealthy. But I need to tell you right now, those houses require escape velocity. We're just not going to get there. It's not in the cards. But, you know, we look at people that build a legacy business. You know, they start out to build a lifestyle. They start out with some personal achievements, personal goals in mind. And then they get there and they realize that what they've built, the organization, the people, the systems, the revenue generating capacity, is bigger than they are. And they keep working. Some of them keep working very, very hard to build a legacy business. Not necessarily that it has their name on it, but they want successors. They have junior partners, or they want their employees taken care of, or they want to change the community. You look at the effect of some of these companies. Tom Say in Zappos in Las Vegas, what he's doing to downtown Las Vegas, to the rundown areas of Las Vegas, you know, deliberately moving his company and his people down there to bring new income and new revenue and recharge the local businesses and stuff. And, you know, Las Vegas got hit hard in the Great Recession. And Zappos was one of the things that saved a lot of people's bacon. A lot of stores would be out of business today if he didn't make those kind of decisions. So entrepreneurs get a bigger vision. And that's clearly very much a hunter trait. They keep hunting because they like the hunt. They like building something. They've long ago satisfied any reasonable personal financial desires. And there's a few of them out there that do it just to keep score, because money is keeping score. But not many. Most of them do it because they have a bigger picture of what they want to accomplish.
Well, in terms of, you know, the success and kind of now what, and once they've achieved their legacy or lifestyle requirements, you know, then what do they do?
Well, moving from lifestyle to legacy is not for all entrepreneurs. Some don't know what to do. We talked earlier about technicians. You know, there are many technicians that don't know what they would do if they weren't building widgets. So we have a couple of, we see a couple of behaviors with the people that have really achieved all their own financial objectives. One are the advocators. They just go out and have fun. They're just hanging out. They leave the company there to run itself. And frequently those systems aren't nearly as strong as they thought they were, or the company has a void with leadership. They've built farmers under them that know how to do the tasks of the business, but they don't have the vision for what's next.
Status quo.
Keep it running.
That's right.
And just similar to the inheritors we talked about. And very often the abdicators wind up dragged back into their business because it hits a big pothole in the road. And they're the only ones that can run back and save it. Because
yeah, exactly. One of the most poignant points, I think, is in terms of the abdicators, the second in charge, they don't have the decision ability to make decisions based on risk.
Right.
And so basically it's maintaining the status quo and not growing it.
Yes. And hunters assess risk and they decide, they do a risk-reward mental calculation in a split second and say, let's go for it. The second in command, who's left to run the company, doesn't have that flexibility. He can't just bet the ranch.
Right.
He can't just say, hey, let's go for it. What the hell? It might not work out, but I'm willing to accept that risk. He's not allowed to accept that risk.
Right. And I'd never thought of it that way, but that's very true.
And then The second kind is the prevaricators. They're in the business sometimes, and they're not in the business sometimes. They show up one day, and they change a process or change a system or give a special deal to a new customer or get in a fight with a vendor and tell them to go take a hike. And then they take off again and leave everybody else to clean it up. We call that seagull management.
Yeah, seagull management.
We all know a few of those.
Yeah,
yes.
they fly in, crap on the table, and fly out again.
Yeah. Somebody clean up the picnic table.
Right. And, you know, they're tremendously disruptive because every time the company settled down and started to run smoothly, they just dive in. And some of them do it because they like chaos. Some of them do it because they don't know how to function unless they're the master juggler that are walking through all the chaos and handling everything themselves. But when they go away, they leave chaos behind them and nobody that knows how to handle it. And then you have the progressives. The progressives are the people, like my story of Nancy Kudla, who told me once that when she built her company up to a tremendous level, she had 200 employees, very successful nationally. Actually, Nancy won the SBA Small Business of the Year nationally. That's how good a company she built. And she said, I'm sitting there one day at the management meeting, and I'm looking down at this management team I've assembled. And I said, these people are great. They're the best in their fields. They all have their own reputations. They all have their own cachet in the industry. They have followers that pay attention to them and listen to what they say. And she said, it suddenly occurred to me that if I didn't own this company, they wouldn't let me sit in this chair. Which is why it's good to be king or queen, as the case may be. But you know, the making the leap is what I call the transition from being a business owner to a CEO. And if you're going to run a legacy business, if you're going to build something that not only lives after you, as brokers, you know, companies continue, somebody else comes in and runs it, but it's not the thing you built anymore. They start changing it on day one.
All right.
If you're going to build something that has so much momentum and is so well designed that it is going to last beyond your career and continue to do the things you want it to do, whether it's create jobs, generate a lot of money, or change the community, then you have to be a CEO. Then you have to learn how to do almost nothing personally except allocate resources and teach other people how to use them. And that, for a founder, for a startup that, you know, came out of Nancy's company, she jokes that originally her letterhead said suite 2B. That was the second bedroom of their house.
That's good. You know,
and to build something up that eventually Nancy sold for in excess of $35 million, you know, takes that kind of leap. And even hunters don't always make that, but only hunters can make
it. Yeah, they have to create something that they have the ability to do that with. What about the, you know, trying to find new hunting grounds? I mean, once you've built it and you want to, you know, go to the next level, what's the options there?
Well, you know, as brokers, the first thing you ask when somebody comes in and says, I want to sell my business, is what are you going to do after you sell it?
Other side of the fence. Do they have a vision?
Because hunters don't do well moving away from something. Hunters are always going towards something, going back to the fact that they're linear, point A to point B to point C. And you know as well as I do that if an owner says, gee, I don't know, I'll figure that out later, he's not moving towards something. He's not ready to sell the business. He has to have something he'd rather do instead, whether it's retirement. I mean, for hunters, it's seldom lay on the beach, but certainly I know a lot that get involved in charitable causes, that start doing not-for-profit work, that start other businesses, that want to be in a different business. And
hopefully within their industry or knowledge base.
Well, and of course not in violation of their non-compete agreement. But, you know, so there are third-party sales that you can transition to insiders if you've brought a couple hunters. And if you're going to have a really good second-in-command, it should be a hunter. A lot of people feel safer with a farmer or second-in-command. But if you're going to build a good company, you need a second-in-command that'll butt heads with you and challenge you a little bit and thinks a bit differently than you do. And then the third alternative is close it down.
Yeah,
you know, and there's
it happens a lot.
And if the company has served your personal purpose, if it has fulfilled your goals, if it has gotten you the wealth, the lifestyle, the comfort that you expect, the security for your family, then it's done its job. And I think as a human being, you have some responsibility to transition your employees and help them out. But, you know, all the things we talk about, and I wanted, if you don't mind, to get back to the concept again. This book was written for owners. It wasn't written for managers. It's not a consulting management style book. It's not an ABC system book. The message here is you need to run the company you want to run, and you need to run it the way you want to run it. And the more you try to run your business the way somebody else tells you it has to run, the less fun you're going to have in your company. And hunters, above all, like to have fun. They like excitement. They're adrenaline junkies. That's why for 10,000 years they've taken a spear and gone out against something bigger than them. You know, that could kill them if they're not paying attention. You know?
That's something we commonly hear is the discussion with the seller about, you know, what's their next venture and you know, how they want to get to their next point. And a lot of, oftentimes it's not retiring.
You know, no, it seldom is, because we're active. Hunters are out there doing something. But I know a man that had I have a former client who had a cold storage company that now has become a real powerhouse in water wells in South America for poor villages. I mean, there's just so many things that hunters have the skills to do when they apply them.
Very good. Well, today we've been talking with John Denny, author of several books. This one has been Hunting in a Farmer's World. And next week, Doug, you want to introduce the subject for next week?
Well, we'll be talking about franchises and finding the right franchise. And, well, our featured guest is Tom Raymond.
Very good. And you can find John's book, Hunting in a Farmer's World, in hard copy, softback, or on Kindle at Amazon. And thank you for listening this week.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you again for joining us today for Biz Broker Talk. Please join Robert and Doug again next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. After today's show, we hope you are one step closer to a successful sale of your business.